This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Welcome to another episode of Over the Influence. You're listening to me, Sharon Shazza Hartley. I'm 46 years old, live in Lancashire in the northwest of England, married to Paul, and currently surviving lockdown with three children at home, two teenagers, and a 12-year-old. Joined by Freddie, as always.
Hello, I am Freddie, otherwise known as Freddie Bennett. Also enjoying lockdown in Liverpool with my family, and we are trying not to kill each other. But the most important thing is that we are trying to stay sober and help other people stay sober in what is a very difficult time. But as I always like to say, we are locked down, but we are not knocked down. And you know what, Shazza? I am so excited because we have got our very first guest here on Over the Influence, and there is no one else that I would rather have on the show. We have an Antipodean rock god. We have someone who has been an absolute inspiration to me for years, and his alcohol-free journey and that whole story of from where he's come from and where he is now is absolutely unbelievable. This one is going to blow your socks off. Drew, I am so happy and so proud to have you right here on Over the Influence.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for that far too generous introduction.
That was quite a build-up, Drew.
I know, right? Now I've got massive expectations, which I'm sure will let everyone down.
I think it's worth saying as well, Freddie, at this point, this is our first, well, there's four of us on this Zoom call, and yep, we are in two time zones. So we're recording in an evening in England, and we've got Drew over in Melbourne, and it's tomorrow, which blows my mind. It's 6:30 in the morning.
So you always said the plan for this was if obviously coronavirus and a lockdown somewhat ruined everyone's plans in the world. But obviously, if we hadn't had coronavirus, then I would have suggested that we'd picked up the show, taken it on the road, flown to Melbourne to have this 40-minute discussion. There's nothing like ruining the carbon footprint to really... But if it made a good show, and if we delighted our listeners, which I'm sure we will, then it would absolutely be worth it.
So, Drew, as Freddie was saying, it's just absolutely brilliant to have you on board today. Just introduce yourself to us. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure thing. So my name's Drew Shapa. I live in Melbourne, Australia. I'm 37. I'm married with one daughter who's now nearly four. Yeah. So as Freddie mentioned, I played drums in a sort of middling to poorly successful band, and had a few tours around the world and various things, and got myself in quite a pickle with drugs and alcohol along the way. And I gave up drinking and taking drugs about, I think September 2018 I started trying, and had a few false starts and various catastrophic tumbles off the wagon along the way, and then finally put it together and have just clocked over about 520 days sober.
That's truly unbelievable. And I think something we always talk about on Over the Influence is that anyone really can do it. And I think you're such a testament to someone that has really lived that rock and roll lifestyle. And I'm sure being there, got the stories, got the band t-shirt, but to be able to have that strength to go through that journey does show that change really is possible for anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's an interesting one because there are actually quite a lot of sober musicians. You hear about it all the time. And, you know, obviously being in that kind of bubble where you're surrounded by alcohol and drugs, and it's almost like an industry. It's just an expectation that you are going to drink, that you're going to party, and there's no one telling you you shouldn't. And there's no kind of, it's very difficult to have the kind of regular moral compass. You don't have to get up at 9 o'clock, you know, for a 9 o'clock start and have this kind of, you know, professionalism. You can kind of tip into a venue hungover and drunk already and no one really cares. So nice. Breaking that, it's certainly not unprecedented. There's plenty of better stories than mine, but it is still difficult. And, you know, to have done that, I was quite, you know, it was a hard one because I was sort of, you know, being surrounded by drugs and alcohol the whole time. So right from the get-go, when I was trying to stay sober, it was just in your face 24/7. So yeah, it felt like a good thing to do. And I certainly, as I got further along, I got more comfortable with that environment.
So just referring back to what you said, you described your past as, you described it as a bit of a pickle and also catastrophic. Just describe an average weekend to us in the days before you decided to go drug and alcohol free.
Sure thing. So I started drinking at about 13 and I started taking drugs at about 14. So I'd always kind of had these big binges on the weekend, and, you know, from about sort of 18 to about 30, I probably, until my daughter was born, really, I was sort of going without sleep most weekends. So taking a lot of amphetamines and ecstasy and things like that, as well as drinking just continuously, you know, from Friday through Sunday. I kind of settled down a little bit with the birth of my daughter because you just have to, and, you know, you can't sort of justify that. But once the band sort of kicked off again and we started touring, then it sort of became much more habitual. So it turned from like a weekend kind of binge sort of thing into a more like getting drunk every day and, you know, getting my hands on whatever drugs I could and sort of continuing that for 6 weeks at a time when we were touring. So when I finally decided to try and get sober, I'd just come back from a tour of Europe where I'd drunk to the point of where I was either physically sick or passing out every night for 6 weeks. And the last week of that, I'd also been taking speed every day as well. So I was in a pretty bad way. And then I sort of thought I'd just normalize when I got back home and I'd just slip back into dad mode and husband mode and it would just all go away miraculously. And as we all know, it's not like that. It's once you've sort of set that bar that high, it doesn't just miraculously reset to where you were before that. And so I was finding I was drinking every day habitually at home by myself. So I'd sort of turned from a partier into a chronic drinker. And I think that, you know, at that point you can kind of say, well, without the labels and stuff, that you're sort of struggling with some kind of alcoholism. And yeah, so I really felt that at that point I was in a position where I had to do something about it and do something on a more kind of permanent level.
And how did it go down at home, Drew? I could certainly relate to some of that story. I mean, not in the band sense, but I've been away where you have weeks or, you know, a long time where you're hitting it hard every day, and then you get in that position where you're feeling so shitty, to be honest. And you're like, well, I know what helped me feel better. I'll have a drink and everything. And then, as you say, when you go from this very hard partying environment and then you walk through the front door and it's like daddy's home, and you say you felt it difficult to adjust. I mean, did you feel like you had to hide it? Did you have to just sit on the sofa and say, look, guys, I'm needing the drink now? And did it sort of affect your relationship and things like that?
It definitely did. I mean, my wife was quite rightly resentful at being left for, you know, I had sort of two of those 6 week tours and a smaller tour in America. We went to play some festivals over there and record an album all in the space of sort of 8 months. So I was away every 3 weeks, you know, for like a long period of time. So I left her alone with our then 2-year-old quite a long time. So she was already very stretched to the limit. So I kind of got home, and then she and I were in a, you know, a tough patch of our marriage because, you know, she was bore some resentment at being left alone like that while I kind of went off pursuing my dream, which I think is completely fair enough. So we had some things to work through. In terms of drinking wise, I was hiding a little bit. She's been always very accepting and supportive of me regardless. So she wasn't sort of saying you have to stop drinking or anything like that. But it was very interesting when I said I was going to stop. She didn't sort of say, oh, what do you mean? Oh, you don't have a problem or anything like that. It was like, no, good. That's a good decision. So it was like, that told me all I needed to know, really. So yeah, but look, to be honest, I was hiding things. I was doing that, you know, classic alcohol sneak thing of, you know, like having half a bottle of wine with her, but then, you know, topping up on a few whiskeys in between drinks, and then, you know, having a secret stash of, you know, several different bottles of whiskeys that were all open at once that I could rotate through, going down to the bottle shop and, you know, getting really strong beers that were like 12% and drinking the whole bottle and trying to, you know, justify those kinds of things. So
oh, definitely there. I had the, you know, you're in the lounge and you're all like, oh, I'll go and top us up. And you go in the kitchen and you're like, oh, one for me and one another one for me and one for you. And it's those sort of, the sort of the sneaky around, you say, it's not, you don't think of it as proper lying, but then you realise that you're kind of hiding something from yourself and those nearest to you.
Exactly. And I never sort of And it's that thing of like, I don't think I ever sort of intentionally went out to deceive her or anyone really, but alcohol made me incredibly unreliable, and I would do things that just put other things before family, before my marriage. And it just got to the point where it was getting ridiculous. Like, I would say one thing, I'll be home at 11 after a gig, and then I'd end up, you know, snorting coke in the toilet at 12 when I'm supposed to be home, and stumbling in at 10 a.m. drunk as, and, you know, sick. It's not really a good way to run a relationship or to be a parent. And that was kind of one of the things that made me feel really like I needed to pull my head in and do something about it. Was seeing my daughter actually say, "What's wrong with you?"
And do you? I mean, I totally emphasise it wasn't. It was quite recently with me. You know, at a family holiday, and I went for a couple of drinks, which ended up into about an all night session, and I have no recollection of it. But there's a story that one of my nephews came into the bathroom in the morning, and he was like stepping over me whilst I was just sort of passed out on the bathroom floor. And you think, it's those sort of things where you think, hang on, maybe that's not quite cool, and it's not quite as cool as it was when I was 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah, exactly right.
And do you think, Drew, I mean, it's a cliche, I know, but do you think that you had to reach that decision yourself? Because I know this, in the alcohol-free world, they always say that, you know, someone has to realise that they want to change their life. You can't make them change unless they're ready. And do you think that's the case?
I think so. As much as I loved partying and I loved drinking, I listened to your first podcast, and I totally understand that thing of like, I loved partying. I loved getting drunk with the guys. And, I thought it was such a crucial component to my identity. But I also had this kind of sense from when I was very young that it wasn't really what I wanted to be, or wasn't really actually core to my identity at all. So I'd had these like moments where I'd sort of, and much like you, Shaz, too, like where I'd do dry January or I'd do dry July in Australia, and I'd have like a month off. And it was particularly after I'd, you know, had a massive bender, and I'd sort of gone, wow, that's really pushed the limits. I need to back off. And I'd love those sober months. I'd feel better. I'd be fitter and more healthily and save a ton of money. And then I would just be around 3 weeks. I'd just start itching, and I'd always cut my month off short on a convenient Friday, and then I'd just be straight back to where I was, and nothing ever stuck. So I think I had this kind of bubbling sense of like, I wanted to try life without booze and drugs, but I could never get it together. So I think for me, yeah, I had to come to it on my own, but I also had to be sort of confronted by the fact that I wasn't actually functioning well anymore. Like, I'd always been this kind of high functioning binge drinker, but I was getting to the point where I was starting to really, you know, I was doing really dumb things and staying out till 2 a.m. on work night, and, you know, doing drugs on a work night and sitting in the work cubicle, you know, like trying not to vomit and, you know, having diarrhea all day and stuff like this, where I was actually like, this is no longer high functioning. This is poorly functioning.
And did it affect your music at all?
It's hard to say. I mean, I saw video footage of our last tour, and we played really well. So I think I was good enough at the time to kind of get through it, but I think I definitely did it just way harder than it needed to be. Like, I remember the last night of touring, and I was sweating so much because I was just like sweating out booze and drugs, and like my legs, I felt like I was running a marathon. I'm like, this is an hour set, this is nothing physically demanding at all. So I think that physically, like, it just became so much harder than it needed to be. And look, probably I could have been way better than I am, but I was pissed half the time, so probably in reality.
Drew, I've got a question for you about social life. Me and Freddie have talked in previous episodes about how hard it is when you put it out there. You say, right, okay, I'm gonna go alcohol free, and in your case drug and alcohol free, yet what you've described to us and your social scene, and of course touring with the band, the two seem to go hand in hand. What was the reaction of your bandmates and of your friends when you said, you know what, I'm stopping?
Well, it was interesting with my bandmates. Half of them don't drink, so it was this funny thing of like me and one other guy in the band were just smashing it, and the other two, one drinks moderately and the other one didn't drink at all. So I do sort of look back and cringe and think, what must they, you know, have thought of us? But the guy who I was getting drunk with was super supportive because he saw, you know, he was with me on it. He was sort of at the same stage of drinking as well, and he has tried to give up as well. So they were very supportive and they were fine about it, really. But I have played in other bands where they're just, you know, getting smashed the whole time. Look, to be honest, the music scene was amazingly supportive. No one was sort of judgmental or anything, and that was a real eye-opener to me. It was sort of how much of this has been just me justifying drinking rather than it was a perceived kind of pressure to drink. It wasn't actually real. It was just that, oh, I've got an excuse. I'm in a pub. I can't not drink.
That's the thing, isn't it? You will look for an excuse to drink at any point, which we've said before, you know, in your case, oh, I'm a musician, I'm touring, I'm this, I'm that. I mean, well, for me, it'd be the day ends in a Y, you know, so it's Wind Down Wednesday or whatever. But what we've found through talking and talking to other people, those excuses you found to drink now become your reasons not to. Is that the same case with you, Drew?
Absolutely. And to be honest, the only thing that I have found that I have enjoyed less without alcohol is just sitting around in a pub.
Yeah, it's rubbish, isn't it?
That's the only thing. So, like, those events, like going to see concerts, going to see gigs, playing gigs, you know, anything that has some kind of entertainment, even going to, like, the football or, you know, sporting events and stuff, it's really fun sober, and I had such a great time. But weddings, you know, all those kinds of things, really good fun. Going out to dinner, the only thing I can't stand and that, you know, I feel like is just not fun is sitting around in a pub getting drunk and watching people get drunk.
Couldn't agree more.
I think hopefully, Drew, like, that gives you, like, the self-belief. As you say, it was so caught up in my personality, you know, because I had to be the first guy at the bar, the first guy getting the shots in, the guy that was trying to make the party happen. And you go through that stage where you worry and you think, you know, are my friends still going to be my friends anymore? And, you know, if I say I'm not going to go to the pub, are they going to laugh at me? Are they going to, you know, delete me from the phones? And you have to try and develop that self-belief where you're like, you know what, this is me now. Oh, obviously, don't try and sing when you're talking to a musician. Sorry.
Oh, Freddie, I can't believe you just did that.
I'm no musician. I'm a drummer. Come on.
Drew, it's fair to say you look really well. Just talk us about the physical benefits you've found through changing. You've changed massively. You've changed everything, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess physically, one of the first things I thought I must do is try and do some exercise. And, you know, I was really physically very unwell when I came home from touring. And I thought, you know, part of that was lack of exercise, terrible diet, lots of drinking. So when I sort of started thinking about, you know, getting rid of alcohol, I thought I need to get some more positive routines, and I think I'm quite an extreme person and I need these kind of addictions. So I just started getting up at 5:30 and going to the gym every day. I was just like, go do it, even if you just walk on a treadmill for 5 minutes, just go and do something. And it was amazing how just getting into that routine of just doing something every day started to really, it took ages, to be honest. Like, I wasn't straight into like running or straight into heaps of things like that, but it just sort of built up. And then slowly over time, I started feeling like I was getting healthy again and just replacing those bad habits of drinking with a good habit. And, you know, if I was tempted at night, if I was playing a show and I was feeling like I was wavering really badly, I just thought forward to that, you know, 5:30 a.m. wake up. It became something to look forward to. And I know you guys are, you know, particularly you, Freddie, you've done some amazing feats with running and stuff, and that's always been so inspiring to look at.
Oh, thanks, man.
Oh, absolutely, it has. And you too, Shaz, like with all your running and stuff. I know you hate running. So, but
yeah, I'm just like some hideous middle-aged blob. I'm nothing like Freddie, you know. It's just I tolerate it. But like
Shaz,
you,
you're
Drew.
You're not middle-aged, are you? I thought you were about 34, 35. Oh,
thanks, 36. Oh. I'll take that. but Drew, what you were saying there, it's just about doing something different, isn't it? And it is glorious getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning because you don't have a hangover. And for you, the difference between getting up now, fresh-faced, feeling great, compared to back then after a 48-hour bender with the band or whatever, you must feel amazing and incredibly proud of where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the early starts, I mean, I know it sounds really sort of overly simple, but like getting up early at the same sort of time every day, I felt was such a great routine, and it sort of capped the end of the day, and it stopped some of those like impulses to kind of like, you know, it's 9 o'clock at night, my daughter's in bed, what do I do? I go to bed in half an hour because I'm shagged from getting up at 5:30. So it set like this kind of nice, more kind of circadian kind of existence, and it sort of dampened my evenings, because that was when I would get into trouble, as the kind of few hours between, you know, my daughter's bedtime and my bedtime, where I'd sort of start going, oh, what do I do? I'm bored. I'm, you know, I need some kind of stress relief. I need something to sort of put a full stop on the day. And I found that the early morning exercise was actually doing that really well. And that was also calming some of my anxiety and some of my kind of tendencies to slip into, you know, depression and stuff. So yeah, the difference was just amazing. And I remember one, it was New Year's Day last year, and it was my first sober New Year's Day, and I got up at 5:30 and did my morning run, and there were like just people still up, you know, on the beach getting shit-faced. And I just thought, like, I've been that person every year of my life on every day of the new year since I was about 14, and here I am at 36 running around like that smug asshole that you see, you know, like running around, you know, mid bender, thinking, God, what, look at that prick. And so yeah, I was that smug prick, and I was really happy about it. So.
It's great being that smug prick occasionally, isn't it? It really is. Drew, what you were just talking about there, this is something Freddie might want to chat to you about, is the improvement in your mental health. You've just touched on depression and anxiety. I imagine this has all changed as well now.
Yeah, it has massively. I didn't realise how much drinking was causing me to be very anxious. And I mean, it was partly the pressure cooker of the band. I was sort of doing all the managing and nuts and bolts of tour booking and all that kind of stuff. And I also hung out financially quite a long way. And so those things kind of, the, you know, excessive alcohol, the financial strain, and obviously the relationship sort of strain of being away a lot, I really spiraled with my mental health. And I got help while I was in the midst of that, and I was sort of on quite a high dose of antidepressants to kind of cope with the anxiety. But I was drinking and taking drugs the whole time. So it worked for like a couple of days, and then I just felt terrible again. And the psychiatrist I was seeing was just like, oh, you need to stop drinking. And I was like, yeah, I know that. Any pointers or any help? And there was just no help at all. So I started speaking to a psychologist, and I was very aware that I was, you know, in a bad way, but I just couldn't seem to get it together. So I kind of had to, I think I just had to kind of bottom out with alcohol before I did anything about it. And then it was really 6 months of that kind of really bad anxiety spiral before I started getting off the alcohol and the drugs. And then about probably, I think about 3 months of being alcohol free, then I started coming off the antidepressants, and I've been completely off them now for, yeah, over a year, I guess now. So
awesome. No, I totally get that. And it's funny, isn't it? Because it doesn't take a scientist to work out. And we all know that alcohol is a depressant, but I was the same. I didn't put the connection together. I couldn't work out for years and years, like, you feel shitty and then you get hungover and then you get anxious, then other things happen in your life, so you have a drink and you feel better and you get in that cycle. And when I sort of had my mental health issues, and I sort of went through therapy, and I had that thing where I knew I was drinking too much. I knew I couldn't blame everything on alcohol, but I knew it was definitely a big contributor. And I kind of said to the guy that I was seeing in therapy, and I was like, is it? I'm a bit worried that I'm drinking too much. And he actually said to me, no, I don't think you've got an alcohol problem. And he was like, oh, you've got all sorts of problems. You've got a problem as long as a shopping list. But he's like, alcohol, you're okay though. And then for about a couple of years after that, I had that, literally that sentence he said in my head, that, oh, this guy with the certificates on his wall, he said that I don't drink too much, so, you know, pour me another one. It wasn't until after I stopped that I realised what a big contributor it was. It was in the early days, like in the first, I think I was about call it 2 weeks alcohol free, my anxiety was through the roof. It was like all the skeletons in my closet, all the mistakes of my past were coming back to haunt me. And I don't know if it was my brain resetting or just, you know, my whole body saying, oh, hang on, this is what normal life is like when you're not drunk half the time. But it is like a roller coaster with your emotions.
Absolutely. I had the same experience. I mean, lots of people talk about, you know, how their anxiety drops when they start, you know, to give up alcohol and other drugs. And I had the exact opposite. I felt like all of a sudden I just did not know where to turn. I had no off switch. I was so anxious and really struggling with that. And I realized how much I'd drunk to alleviate social anxiety, and I all of a sudden didn't have that. And I just had no coping strategies whatsoever. That was my only coping strategy. So when I got anxious in public or, you know, on the public transport, I found myself, you know, having panic attacks on the train to work and stuff, partly because it was a shit job and I hated it and I was dreading going to work and I wasn't blunted like I usually was to make it okay. And I was kind of a bit resentful because I thought I was doing all the right things of, you know, stopping drinking, and here am I having more mental health issues than I ever had. But I just stayed the course. I talked with my psychologist, who was much more sympathetic, and she was very good about sort of reminding me that, you know, you've been drinking to alleviate social anxiety since you were 13, which is like you've had no experience as an adult without alcohol, really. And it's going to just take time. So I guess I just had to stick with it. And eventually over time I started, you know, meditating and, you know, doing much more exercise and trying to kind of let anxiety flow a little bit more and stop feeling so bad that, you know, you feel bad. So, yeah, slowly over time. And I think, you know, as we all know from, you know, doing over a year of sobriety, it does come in waves, and you hit those flat patches and patches where your past kind of catches up with you, I think, and you feel terrible and look back on your life and think, what the hell have you been doing?
Idris, as I like to say, and it's going to be a Freddie saying, that regret is just a mistake that we haven't forgiven ourselves for yet. And, oh, and you know, there you go. I think I almost made Shazza cry then when I said that.
Oh, I like that. That was deep. Freddie, that just touched me.
Crikey. I know. I can only do about one a month, and that's been my one for May now. But I mean, yeah, I mean, regret's a terrible thing, but yeah, I can't remember it now. Yeah, it's a mistake we haven't forgiven ourselves. You know, that's why I had so many regrets. I did so many stupid things. And you know what? I'm sure I will still do stupid things in the future, even though I'm not drinking. But then you think, pouring a bottle of vodka down my head, down my throat, can't change the past. We have to accept that we're not perfect, and alcohol's certainly not going to make us any more perfect.
And when I think back on the sort of the worst things I've done, they all started with a drink, pretty much all of them. Like, and I thought, wow, that's a really sobering thought that, you know, every really catastrophically bad decision I've made started with one beer, and it just escalates from there. So that was another thing that I also felt oddly kind of comforted by. I was like, just say no to that one beer and see what happens, see how many dumb things you do. And it's been quite interesting to sort of just slowly keep track of that. And I've realized that, you know, I've just put myself in so much less stupid situations because of that. And that makes everything around you, that kind of ripples out as well. Like, my wife is now very much more kind of, she just relies on me much more because I'm not that kind of irresponsible person that you can't rely on to get home. And they say they're going to get home, you know, she feels much more comfortable leaving me with doing much more of the parenting duties because she knows I'm not going to get drunk and, you know, be a bad dad and those kinds of things. So that those unforeseen consequences really start to add up. And I think that that's something I would never have been able to predict when I started to get sober.
We're just going to take a really quick break from this episode of Over the Influence and do a handful of shout outs and massive thank yous basically to those of you that have taken the trouble to visit our website, click on that big blue button and throw a few quid into the pot. We say it's buying us an alcohol-free beer, shouting us a coffee. anything you throw our way, it goes straight back into the costs of the podcast. As you know, listening to podcasts is free. Producing them isn't. We do have a few costs to cover in terms of marketing, a bit of equipment, that sort of thing. So thank you so much. It's hugely appreciated. I'll give you the website address in just a moment. First of all, thank you to Julie Dawson, who says she's loving the podcast. Julie, we are loving having you on board. Thank you so much for the coffee. Jeff Trowell says that he can relate to all of the content. Jeff, this is why me and Freddie overshare, because we know it's not just us going through this, and it's brilliant that you can relate to it too. And thank you so much for buying us a coffee. Ben Shannon, brilliant podcast. Thank you so much, Ben. That's so kind. He says that listening to us has now inspired him to go for 90 full days alcohol free. Ben, me and Freddie were where you were. If we can do this, you can do this. And thank you for contributing towards our podcast. Anna says, keep up the great work. We shall try our very bestest, Anna. Thank you so much. And John Smith, get this. He's been alcohol free for 801 days. Absolutely unbelievable. John was a huge drinker back in the day. He will admit this himself. He's now 801 days without a drop of alcohol. John joined us for it was a sober social that myself and Freddie held, obviously well before the coronavirus outbreak. And John said that giving up alcohol has given him courage, basically. He would never have come to this had he been drinking. John, we would have never have organised this had we been drinking. I remember scoffing at the thought of a sober social back in my drinking days. I wouldn't have dreamed of attending such an event. But hey, how life changes when you remove just one thing. Thank you to all of you so much for taking the time out. Well, first of all, to listen and then to contribute. We really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to do that, you can visit our website, which is soundrebel.co.uk/overtheinfluence. There's a great big blue button on there and you can click on it and buy us a coffee or an alcohol-free beer. Thank you so much. Drew, you've shared with us your incredible story. It's been amazing. Looking ahead, do you ever think you might drink again, take drugs again? What if the urge comes over you now? What do you do? What are your coping mechanisms?
Okay. So the plan is, how I'm feeling at the moment is I don't have any intention to drink again. I just don't feel like I think I'd be perfectly fine to have like a beer or two. I just don't feel like inviting that potential drama back into my life. So at the moment, I'm feeling pretty solid with alcohol. I must admit that the whole like lockdown and COVID crisis has been the most tempted I've been in nearly 18 months.
It's been really difficult, hasn't it? I mean, myself and Freddie talked about this on our last episode. It is a really, really tough time, and it would be so easy to go, yeah, go on, let's have a drink.
Yeah, I had a moment last week where I was just like, you know, it was sort of like week seven of lockdown, and I just thought like, I just want to get outside my head for 2 seconds. I just couldn't, like, I was kind of, I tapped out of other coping mechanisms, and I just saw there was a bottle of wine sitting there because my wife still has the occasional glass, and I just thought I could crack that and just, you know, forget about my troubles for a couple of hours. But then I also over a year of kind of, you know, pattern thinking, I just straight away said, you know, to myself, what would that actually achieve? How would I feel after that 2 hour buzz was up? Would I just march down the street to get more? Would I then get the itch for like stronger stuff? You know, yeah. So I was able to sort of squash that. So no intention of drinking. And to be honest, drugs, it's really funny. I mean, such a big part of my life for so many years, but now that I'm not drinking to remove my inhibitions, I'm shit scared of drugs. Like, what the hell is in them? Where do they come from? The blood that they've got on the supply chain. I just, like, the whole thing is just completely abhorrent to me now, which is really interesting. And that happened so early on. I just found that it was alcohol that was really opening the floodgates for more partying, and it's just gone now that I'm, you know, yeah, not drinking. So that was really another really great unforeseen consequence.
You can hear the changes, Drew. I mean, you just said right at the beginning of the podcast, you're over 500 days now alcohol free, and with that comes a whole new persona and a whole new stack of strength to deal with the future, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, like, we've sort of talked about this along the way quite a lot, but I think it's a really important point that going alcohol-free doesn't sort of magically make your life better, but it gives you the chance to find out what's going wrong and fix it, because you're not sort of numbing yourself or you're not coping. I think alcohol is such a numbing chemical, and it's such an easy kind of crutch, because it does allow you to kind of cope with things that aren't going well in your life. And all of a sudden those things start to really stare you in the face when you remove that drug. I think that then allows you to sort of work on the tools that then, you know, you can address those things. So for me, it was just a first step to then being able to have the confidence and the ability to work on myself after that. So that might be a long process, but, you know, certainly I'm feeling a lot better than I was 520 days ago when I woke up in a tent after a ketamine speed cocaine alcohol bender. So
so Drew, we've talked about what an amazing journey it's been for the last, you know, 520 days, and now the obvious question is what's next? What have you got planned? What does life look like? I've heard rumors in the press about a book coming out, and so what does the future look like for you?
So I'm working on a book. I've just sort of finished my second draft, so it's quite close to being published. I've got a publisher, New York based publisher, who for some God knows why reason have agreed to release it.
Amazing.
So I'm hoping that I'm not sure how that's going to come out with the whole, you know, pandemic and New York being a bit shut down at the moment, but I'm hoping either at the end of this year or maybe sort of mid next year, sometime between 6 months and a year, that'll be coming out. And it's basically a sort of memoir slash sort of quit lit. So it's kind of documented the first year of my sobriety, how I went about it, but also dipping back into the past to kind of show how I got into the kind of trouble that I did, but also the sort of tactics and the sort of things I used to get out of it. So I'm hoping that it's kind of like a relatively interesting read, but hopefully it will help people to get out of their alcohol problems as well. So
absolutely,
that's next for me. That's kind of, I've been just writing all throughout the lockdown, so it's actually been not too bad from that angle. And then I'm going to do something that's very uncharacteristic for me, which is I'm going to wait and see what happens and go from there. So
isn't that amazing? I bet if someone said to you, you know, let's say 2 years ago, that you're going to have a publishing deal, book coming out, you're going to be seen as this inspirational figure in this whole community, then it may have been quite difficult to believe. But it just shows that how quickly life can change sometimes, and how much it can change for the better.
I absolutely have always wanted to write a book, and I used to write quite prolifically, and I studied it at uni and stuff, and I just stopped because I was so sick of going back to my notebook. It's quite amazing. I've still got it, but there's just drunken drivel throughout it. Just this wanky existential bullshit. And I was so sick of reading my own garbled nonsense that I just stopped. And so for probably, you know, 7 or 8 years, this real passion that I'd been doing since I was a kid, just I stopped doing it completely. And it was one of the things that, I probably should have mentioned as well, that was one of the things that helped me with sobriety, was I wrote daily. I just started writing in a notebook first, and then I started posting it just to try and, you know, get it out there and to stop being so guarded about it as well. I wanted to kind of own my problems and also just put it out there. And it was amazing how much, and I know Shaz and Freddie, you've both done the same thing, is amazing how when you put things out there like that, you get all these people saying, oh yeah, that's very, really similar to my experience, that's really similar to things I've done, all that kind of stuff. And straight away you build community by being a bit brave and putting your story out there. So I still can't sort of believe that I've, you know, that the book things, I'm still sort of in massive disbelief about all of that. So I hope it's not a pile of shit, basically. And, you know, if anyone, yeah, if it's vaguely readable, I'll be happy. So
Drew, it has been absolutely brilliant speaking to you. Your journey, you'll cringe at this, but it truly is inspirational. It's been amazing to hear where you've come from, where you are now, and your plans for the future. They really are breathtaking, and every credit to you. And thank you so much for sharing such a personal journey. If you've touched somebody right now and if they want to find out more about you and your story and, of course, the book, where can they get a bit more information?
at the moment, I'm just kind of developing a website for the book and everything, but it will all be available at drewshapper.com. Very original, but it's just myname.com. So that'll be all up and ready to go, I'm hoping, in the next week or so. So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that.
You've got to keep in touch with us. We'll have you back and you can tell us, get back in touch in the future and share about the book and everything. It's really exciting.
Oh, that would be amazing, Shaz. It's been so lovely to talk to you guys finally after many messages over the last year and a half. So.
Drew, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it so much. You are and always will be an absolute inspiration of mine.
Oh, thanks, mate. I feel very much the same about you guys. So yeah, it's been a pleasure to be on this. And, you know, congratulations for doing this. I think it's a wonderful thing. And yeah, I doubt if you'd both flashed back a year and a half, you'd be imagining you'd be doing this either. So,
well, I'd be drunk, so. Yeah. So if you've enjoyed what you've heard today and you're enjoying listening to this this podcast, Over the Influence, do find us on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter at alcoholfreepod. We're on Facebook. Just search up Over the Influence or go to facebook.com/alcoholfreepod. And if you want to contact us privately, we understand that too. You can send us an email to overtheinfluence@samrebel.co.uk.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, it's Danny. I'm 45. I'm from Manchester. I joined the OTI community in October 21. I was sceptical at first because I'm not on any sorts of social media, and I've been in a couple of other very large online sober communities before. I was amazed right from the offset at the involvement that Shaz and Ben have in the community. I thoroughly enjoy the Zoom calls. And I've met some pretty good pals along the way that I didn't realise I was in the market for. We've been out for hikes. It's just great. I've been in touch with like-minded people and it really has been a game changer. So I'd encourage anybody to give it a go.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk